dear listeners. Welcome to another week of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast. I need to thank all of my listeners, each and every one of you, because the podcast has reached 25,000 downloads, and honestly, I couldn't have done it without you. So thank you, each and every one of you, for making this podcast an incredible and satisfying success. I need to thank each and every one of you who has left a rating and written a review. But as always, I would be ever so grateful if those of you who haven't yet left a rating or haven't written a review find it in your hearts to do so. Those ratings and reviews help others find us. This week, I interview the incredible Wayne Miller, and to say that he started life as a scientist would be very reductionist. I like to include a little blurb about my guest every week in the intro, but this week, I'm going to let Wayne describe who he is and just some of the adventures he's had in his life. Sometimes it's better to just let the guest tell you who they are. I loved our conversation because I love science, I love science magazines, and so it was just an absolute thrill to interview Wayne. So now, episode 121 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
Four Arrows and I have in common that we were pierced, although he did a piercing that was to hang. You know, your skin is sliced, a wood dowel is put through the holes, it's attached to a rope. In his case, he was lifted off the ground and hung. In my case, it was on my back and I was pulling buffalo skulls around the circumference of the lodge. If you were to ask a Sundance chief, why do people do this? They would tell you to take on the pain of the community, to its support of being healthy, of having a healthy community. Let me begin with...
I did want to tell you that... So I understand you know Four Arrows.
Yeah.
And I just have to tell you that, you know, I kept seeing his book everywhere, this latest book. So I finally bought it and I started reading it. And I said, I'm going to reach out to him and just... I don't know him at all, but, and you know what? He got back to me immediately and was so kind and so considerate and just really lovely. And we had a great conversation. He did it in his swim trunks, which I thought was hilarious. And then, you know, a few weeks later, after I produced the episode, I go to see Sarah and we're having a conversation. And I said, you know what? I just produce this episode with this gentleman I think you'd find interesting. His name was Four Arrows. And she said, stop. Stop. My dad is good friends with him. And I said, what? Yeah. What are you talking about? That's, oh, I mean, it blew my mind. I couldn't even understand that. So I just love that connection.
Shouldn't have drank when you said that. Okay, so you asked about miracles, and I'll, instead of working from the front back, I'll work from the back front, most recent. So Four Arrows and I are Sundance brothers, and we attend a Cree-Mati Sundance up in Alberta. We've done this for several years. I mean, I think he also went to Lakota Sundances, was invited to do that many years ago. Our Sundance chief is a man in his mid-70s, hanging out with this guy is like taking a hike with Yoda. I mean, it's just, it's a miracle that I was born in a row house in Philadelphia. It's 18 feet wide. There's a 40 or 50 of them. That's a block. And White Standing Buffalo, AKA Tom, was born in northern Saskatchewan in the bush. Didn't come out of the bush until he was 14. So he grew up in all the old ways. And for me to have this man in my life is just astounding. I met him. I met him in an experience. This is a little bit much. Invoked by an advanced biophysics device 7 years before I met him in person. And when I met him in person the first time, I knew it was him. It was the man that I had seen in this vision. He pulled me aside within a couple of days of having met him. And he said to me, you know, Wayne, you were born and raised in a language and culture of nouns. And I was born and raised in a language and culture of verbs. I had to think about that for a moment because no one has ever boiled it all down to that one phrase. You know, it's like, holy shit. You know, a noun is something that we understand because it is distinguished and separate from everything else. A verb is something that connects things in action. So it's a whole. You know, I've known from having studied neuroscience early on that language literally shapes brain form and function. And our brains were shaped along a theme of identifying everything by its separateness. His was shaped by identifying how everything is connected. Wow. And participating in Sundance has been, you know, I mean, from being a scientist to the latter part of my career was spent as a finance guy. So I consulted on well over $100 billion around the world for large companies and countries. So I have this experience in two domains. It's not clear that you need your right brain for either of them. And Sundance has been and continues to be profound in a way that is difficult to capture. My indigenous friends, the ones born into a family that honored what they call the Red Road, you know, the ways that their ancestors lived, have this gift that is stunning. And I'm so grateful for it. My life is immeasurably richer for having had the exposure. Four Arrows and I have in common that we were pierced, although he did a piercing that was to hang. You know, your skin is sliced, a wood dowel is put through the holes. It's attached to a rope. In his case, he was lifted off the ground and hung. In my case, it was on my back, and I was pulling buffalo skulls around the circumference of the lodge. If you were to ask a Sundance chief, why do people do this? They would tell you to take on the pain of the community, to its supportive of being healthy, of having a healthy community. So when I had this experience a few years ago, it's very interesting. There's no pain. You're in some other place. Like you're just in another place. Two eagle wings were placed in my hands. I don't mean someone cut off the wing of an eagle or feathers that are put together, you know, and wrapped with sinew. And Sundance chief says, remember why you're doing this. What came out of my mouth when I started is about 120 pounds of bone that you're moving along the dirt was, I give myself to you, Lord. I give myself to you. I didn't know that was going to come out of my mouth. I didn't practice it. It just came out. And the interesting part of that experience, I mean, the whole thing was interesting, but when I was done walking the circumference of the lodge, they unhooked me. And my first thought was, wow, that's what crucifixion is all about. My Christian friends are like, whoa. And I didn't know that before I did that exercise. But isn't that the whole thing? When my Christian friends talk about Christ died to take on your sins. And, you know, when you read the book, Biography of a Yogi, he's like, oh, yeah, that's what the advanced people do. They take on all the bad karma. They just take it from you. And I had that experience several years ago for the first time when I went to see Amma. Some people know her as the Hugging Saint. You know, this kind of round-ish Indian woman from Kerala, who was known for being one of those advanced souls that come down. I don't know why so many of them show up in India. I don't know. She was here a week after my wife was diagnosed with stage 3 of breast cancer. This talk about miracles. So we went to go see her. We waited for hours. You go up on stage. She hugs you. She took my head, put it to her chest, and kissed my forehead. As you might imagine, Janet and I had been married, I don't know, 20 years then. I adore my wife. I did back then. And, you get a diagnosis like that, it scares the living bejesus out of you. And I didn't hear any giant sucking sound at the time. But I will tell you that she sucked the capacity for me to worry out of my soul. And it's never really come back. So I could look at things without emotional involvement in a way that would have been inconceivable to me at the time. Yeah, the experience with Amma was, I had never met an advanced soul before. Incredible. I mean, I can't explain that in any way. So the story about what made you go see Amma is stunning in and of its own right, because I just finished a book called The Sign and the Seal written by Graham Hancock. And I didn't know who he was. Fascinating individual, turns out. And he was a journalist for The Economist in East Africa. And he heard this myth about how in the Bible, there's this thing that holds the Ten Commandments. And it then just disappears from the Bible and it's never mentioned again. Like this really important thing in the entire biblical narrative. And it's like, yep, it's gone. No one ever says, I wonder what happened to that thing. So in East Africa, there's this myth that somehow it was carried down through Egypt and down into Ethiopia. And it was left in this town, Urim, I think. I'm not sure that's exactly how you say it, Urim, Ethiopia. And at the very end of the book, he goes to this place and there's this ancient Christian Coptic sect. And there's a guy who's known as the Keeper of the Ark. And he's the only one allowed in this building. And he burns myrrh and incense. And he had a picture of this guy. And you could look into this guy's eyes and go, something's different over there. When I saw a picture of Amma, she had the same eyes. And it was published in the Seattle Times the week my wife was diagnosed. And I went, we got to go see her. So this really bizarre sequence of things occurred. I don't know, other than to say I was being guided by something. Yeah, I've had moments like that. After seeing Amma, I came home, I had this experience, and I made a pledge. You saved my wife, I'll be at your service forever. And a lot of things in my life unfolded that were consistent with that. And I can't say that I went along with all of them, because I don't know if the ones I didn't go along with, I don't know how they worked out. I had some pretty, pretty remarkable moments. After I left science, I was in finance, and I was the developer of the first pension fund fiduciary training program in the United States. This is where I go back to, me being the son of a Marine. So we wrote this thing based off of honor. And a lot of people were like, wait, I don't know where you think you're going to get with this in business in the US, because that's not really part of the lexicon. I was in Los Angeles giving a talk on what we had created. There was a woman sitting in the front row. I don't know who she was. Turns out she was the CEO of something called Financial Executives International, the largest association of finance officers in the United States. And she came up to me and said, this has to be in every CFO's toolbox. So they put us on a webcast. And I found myself elevated into conversations that I could never have imagined. Then the same woman from World Bank called me and said, hey, people from the government of Dubai called me. They want me to come over. She was a little bit concerned about being a woman in an Arab country. Dubai doesn't really have those challenges, but This was way back in 2007. It was a little different then, maybe. And so I went in her stead. Someone else from the World Bank invited me to a conference, and this is what I'm getting to, a miraculous moment, invited me to a conference of pension reform in the Middle East and North Africa. 13 Muslim and Arab countries were invited, and it was sponsored by the World Bank, all on pension reform. I had created this fiduciary thing in the U.S. I got invited. You know, I was the only American in the room. I had an amazing moment at the conference. I was at the conference. The conference had just come to an end, and two women from the Lebanese Social Security system came up to me. One of them looked at me. The other couldn't look at me. And she said to me, "How could you?" This is in December of, I want to say 07, I think. It was right after Israel bombed the daylights out of Beirut and killed 1,000 some odd people in the bombing. I instantly knew what she was referring to. You know, I'm in this place where I'm surrounded by these officials from 13 Arab governments. I had nothing to say to her. I didn't know what to say. Nothing came out of me. I didn't know what to say. And so I went back to the room. The conference is over. I'm checking the room, the safe in the room. And, you know, I put my watch in there and some other stuff. And, you know, I'm checking the little lip around the safe, and I find two very nice diamond earrings. And I thought, well, I'm going to be the honest American here. I'm going to turn them into the hotel. These are, I don't know what they were worth. I assumed they were real diamonds because they were in the safe. And someone had left them there. I don't know, $5,000-$10,000, who knows? And so I take them to the front desk and say, "Hey, you know, someone left these diamonds in the safe. You should contact them and figure out who it was, get it back to them." And while I'm there at the front desk, I see these two women from Lebanon that I had nothing to say to. And I want to read this passage. I keep this on my desk. I'm going to read the passage out of this book. Kind of thing, these aphorisms, you study it word by word like a meditation. "When a man becomes steadfast in his abstention from harming others, then all living creatures will cease to feel enmity in his presence." I studied that for days and days and days before going to this conference. I see these two women from Lebanon sitting on the sofa, kind of in this area off to the side of the front desk. I go up to the woman who talked to me. I grab her hand. And I said, "I just want you to know that some of us care for your children as we care for our own." To this day, it's still poignant. She started crying. I started crying. The other woman started crying. And you could feel the bridge being built. And in my whole life, there may never have been as important in a moment as that.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. I'm going to include a link to the book that Wayne references, How to Know God, The Yoga Aphorisms of Patanjali. This is the book that Wayne references when he has that interaction with the women in Jordan. There'll be a link to the book under the episode show notes on the website. I need to thank Wayne for taking time out of his life to have this lively and really fun conversation. I enjoyed every minute, and I had no idea what was coming next. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode: Winnie the Moog, Philip Rice, Music L Files, Frank Schroeder, Sasha End, and Stephen O'Brien. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Size Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to playlists, music, artists and art, I think will lighten and brighten your day. You'll also notice, dear listeners, we've reached season 13 of the podcast. I really can't believe it, but I'm so grateful to you and my guests for allowing me to do this labor of love and bring these stories to the world. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Wayne. Seek to build bridges. Not only will those bridges help the human race evolve into compassion and empathy for the other, but a bridge built every day can build relationship, true friendship and love between all of us. And we need more bridges. We need more conversation and commonality in this world. We need to know the other, get to understand them, find out what makes them tick, who they are as human beings. The media does a great job these days demonizing the other. But if you go out, like Wayne does, with a pure heart and with belief in other people, I'm sure all of us, working together, we can make this world a better and shinier place.